Case update. An arrest has been made in the abduction and murder of 6-year-old Isabel Celis. Featured in episode 20. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. In this bonus update episode, I'll be discussing the breaking news and arrest of a suspect in the 2012 murder of 6-year-old Isabel Celis. For comprehensive details, I recommend listening to episode 20, but I will begin here with a short summary of the case. On the evening of Friday, April 20th, 2012, 6-year-old Isabel Celis was preparing for bed at approximately 11 p.m. Normally, she'd have been in bed sooner, but the family had returned home late when Isabel's brother's Little League game ran long. Isabel had her own bedroom, though she usually slept in the same room as her brother's. This night, though, her mother Becky sat up with her, braiding her hair before tucking her into her own bed in her own room that night. Becky Celis went to sleep shortly after putting Isabel to bed, while her father, Sergio, sat on the couch watching a baseball game. He eventually fell asleep on the couch. When he awoke up, around 5 a.m., he realized he'd fallen asleep on the couch, got up, and walked into the master bedroom to go back to bed. He didn't report hearing or noticing anything out of the ordinary that night. The living room in which he had drifted off earlier is directly connected to Isabel's room, and so the belief was, had there been any kind of noise or struggle, Sergio likely would have been close enough to hear it. A neighbor, Alicia Stardevant, did report waking up when she heard her dogs barking at approximately 6:30 a.m. When she listened more closely, she thought she could hear voices. She didn't think they were close enough to her home to draw concern, though she does recall that the voices sounded male. She went back to sleep. The sun was rising and light was breaking over the horizon. Back at the Celis home, Becky was getting ready for work around this same time and left between 6:30 and 7 a.m. For her part, Becky doesn't recall hearing any voices or seeing anything strange. The house was quiet and nothing seemed disturbed. A little over an hour later, at 8 a.m., Sergio entered Isabel's room to get her ready for the day. She was set to play in a Little League game that morning, which is why she wanted her mother to braid her hair the night before. When Sergio entered the room, he found that Isabel was not in her bed. He and his two sons searched throughout the house, but were unable to locate the 6-year-old. When the oldest son, 14 at the time, went to check Isabel's room again, he noticed that her window was open and the screen had been pushed out and was laying in the backyard. At this point in time, Sergio placed a call to 911. The call has, for many, including myself, been considered extremely out of the ordinary and bizarre. Sergio sounds casual in the conversation, and even more so laughs at one point when he discusses calling his wife and telling her to, quote, get her butt home, end quote. Another 911 call was placed by a neighbor when he found the oldest son in the neighborhood, upset and saying that his sister had been kidnapped. On his call, the son is clearly distraught and tells the police that someone must have broken in and taken his sister. The search for Isabel involved a large array of police, and several FBI agents were brought in as well. The search spanned the neighborhood, blocking off streets and checking everyone who came in and out. Neighboring apartment complexes were searched, neighbors were questioned, officers were sent down to the baseball field, and a nearby landfill was secured. While they were looking for Isabel, investigators were also looking into the Celis family, searching vehicles, and even dispatching officers to search dumpsters located near Sergio's job. A subpoena would later be issued regarding Sergio's financial records from his job and what chemicals he had access to. Canine units were brought in to try and track Isabel's scent and did get a hit on a neighbor's home, but a thorough search produced nothing connected to Isabel. Surveillance cameras from local businesses were examined and showed a large van driving by the home at 1:24 a.m. A private security vehicle stopped in the area at 2:36 a.m., and a lone male was seen walking near the home at 3:32 a.m. The search for Isabel was thorough and went on for days and days. Police were determined to locate the six-year-old, but unfortunately, nothing was found. It was at this time that rumors began spreading around town. Words of a drifter, of a cousin, and even of Sergio himself. The Celis family expressed in press conferences and interviews that they felt the police were focusing in on them, though they swore they had nothing to do with the disappearance. For the most part, Sergio became a person of interest for many who have examined this case, based primarily around his 911 phone call. In total, police received more than 2,000 tips, though none of them turned up anything of value. For the next 5 years, the Celis family went forward with their lives, though they remained the targets of suspicion. News programs, articles, and yes, podcasts including this one, argued that the disappearance appeared to have been an inside job. It was difficult for anyone to imagine that someone could enter the home, abduct Isabel, and get away without someone in the home hearing something. On March 31st, 2017, just a month away from the 5-year anniversary of Isabel's disappearance, the Tucson police held a press conference in which it was announced that 6 to 8 weeks earlier, they had recovered human remains in rural Pima County, and an independent lab had verified through DNA that those remains did in fact belong to Isabel Celis. At the news conference, details were scarce, but investigators did express that Isabel's remains were not found by accident, implying that someone had led authorities to the site, though the name was not revealed at that time. An autopsy later revealed that Isabel's cause of death was homicide by unspecified means. This was the last major update in Isabel's case until last week. On Friday, September 14, 2018, Tucson detectives arrested 36-year-old Christopher Clements in connection with two murders. In total, Clements was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of kidnapping a minor under the age of 15, 2 counts of second-degree burglary, 1 count of theft by controlling stolen property, 1 count of trafficking in stolen property, and 14 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor. According to Tucson Police Chief Chris Magnus, the same man who had held the press conference when Isabel's remains had been found, the FBI received a tip in 2017 about a man who possessed information about the disappearance of Isabel Celis, and that man was named to be Christopher Clements. It appears that it was their conversation with Clements at the time which led them to the discovery of Isabel's remains. When Isabel's remains were recovered, they were in an area very close to where another young girl had been found on June 6, 2014. 3 days earlier, on June 3rd, 13-year-old Maribel Gonzalez told her family that she was going to visit a friend. She left her home, located only minutes away from where the Celis' former residence was. Maribel never returned home. When her mother called the home of the friend she was visiting, she found out that her daughter had never made it there. Maribel was reported missing, though at the time there was consideration that she may have been a runaway. Only 3 days later, that notion was dismissed when Maribel's remains were found near North Trico Road and West Avra Valley Road. There were no major suspects, nor any clues as to who may have murdered the 13-year-old. Christopher Clements has a long history of crimes. In 1998, he was convicted of a sex offense in the state of Oregon when he was only 15 years old. He was sentenced to 1.5 years in prison and 10 years of probation following his release. He was required to register as a sex offender, but in 2006, he was found guilty in the state of Florida for failing to register. Later that year, Clements was charged with violating a protection order and harassing someone via telephone in Oregon. In 2007, Clements was charged with providing false information to authorities when it was found that he gave a fake name to Tucson police on two separate occasions. Clements lived in various residences in Tucson between 2007 and 2012, the year Isabel was taken. One of those locations was an apartment complex less than 2 miles away from the Sellis residence. At the time of Matabele's murder, Clements was out on bail. He was actually sentenced to 46 months in prison in 2008 for failing to register as a sex offender in Tucson. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed that decision in 2011, citing that the law requiring him to register was passed after his 1998 conviction and therefore did not apply. Clements is currently being held on $2 million bond and is scheduled to be arraigned in Pima County on September 24th at 1:30 p.m. Pima County attorney Barbara LaWall assigned three prosecutors to the case and stated, quote, "I'm really pleased to be able to say that Pima County prosecutors and all of law enforcement never gave up the hunt for the killer of these two little girls. The cases went unsolved, but they were never closed. The heart-wrenching tragedies of Matabele Gonzalez and Isabel Sellis's murders have been compounded by a very long, long wait for justice." End quote. The exact details relating to why Clements gave information about the location of Isabel's remains and what ultimately led to his charges is a little unclear, but going forward, there is certainly to be a tremendous amount of coverage in relation to the trial. Hopefully now, justice may be served and Clements will pay for his heinous and vicious crimes. Perhaps now, the families of both Isabel Sellis and Matabele Gonzalez can see justice done and find some closure, but the loss of a child is something they will never recover from. When I examined this case in episode 20, I addressed three theories: that this was a stranger abduction, that Isabel's older cousin was involved, or that Sergio himself was responsible. In that episode, I made the following statement: I think there are too many details of the case which suggest that whoever was involved in this, at a minimum, had familiarity with Isabel or her family, and at a maximum, may have been a member of her family. Obviously, I couldn't have been more wrong, or could I? I also made this statement: at this particular juncture, I do believe that whatever happened to Isabel was perpetrated by someone she knew, likely a family member, and to me, the two biggest possibilities are Justin Mastromarino and Sergio Sellis. Not speaking for anyone else, as I addressed earlier, there was a lot of this out there, but I wanted to give my sincere apology and condolences to the Sellis family. While I don't often go as far to make direct accusations and try to deal in the realm of speculation and theory, I can honestly say that outside of the podcast, I believed that Isabel's murder was linked to a family member. I can't imagine what it's like to lose a child, and then on top of that, to be ridiculed and accused of having been the one responsible for it. To have every word you make and every move you make analyzed by so-called experts. To be considered the one who took away the life that meant so much to you. My hope with Trace Evidence is to bring attention to cases, to spread information, to help draw in eyes and ears. I never expect to solve one, I'm not a detective, and there's nothing I can do to contribute to a case being solved. While I doubt that any member of the Sellis family ever listened to my accounting of this terrible story, I do want to say my sincere interest was to provide coverage and to give Isabel's name more attention. For my incorrect assumptions, I'm sorry. All praise and respect to the Tucson Police Department and the FBI for their hard work on both of these cases over the past 6 years. I sincerely hope we will see justice done, and perhaps have the questions answered once and for all. May Isabel and Maribel rest in peace, and may their families find comfort in the hands of justice. I'll be keeping up with what happens and following the arraignment and subsequent trial. I sincerely hope that Clements, if in fact guilty, will be subject to the full power of the law and never given the ability to harm anyone ever again. My thoughts are with the Celis and Gonzalez families, and I wanted to send out my deepest condolences for their losses and my wish for strength and courage as they face this most difficult time in their lives. This is now the second update I've been able to do, and I'm certainly hoping for more. There may be another one coming soon in the case of Unique Harris, which I chronicled in episode 30. Some new information has been revealed in that case, though nothing has been officially confirmed by authorities yet. I will keep you posted on that and hope sincerely that the answers to that terrible story have finally been found. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case in episode 60 of Trace Evidence.